A couple of weeks ago, I did a Bible study on prayer and fasting. There is an example which I didn't go into. As far as I know, I didn't actually mention it. But there's an example which has been mentioned to me a couple of times in the past week or so. Over in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, just turn with me to 2 Chronicles chapter 20. We find here, in this example, about Jehoshaphat. In 2 Chronicles 20, notice verse 3, it says, "And Jehoshaphat feared and set himself to seek the Eternal. And in addition to that," notice what he did, "and he proclaimed a fast throughout all of Judah." Now this fast was proclaimed throughout all of Judah. And if you notice what his prayer was in verse 5, it says, "Jehoshaphat stood in the congregation of Judah and Jerusalem in the house of the Eternal before the new court. And he said, Eternal God of our fathers, are not you God of heaven, and rules not you over all the kingdoms of the heathen? And in your hand is there not power and might, and none is able to withstand you? Aren't you our God who drove out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel and gave it to your seed of Abraham, your friend, forever?" So he reminds God of this, and he goes into the fact that Ammon and Moab and the Mount Seir were coming against them. And in verse 12 it says, "O our God, will not you judge them? For we have no might against this great company that comes against us. Neither do we know what to do. But our eyes are upon you. And all Judah stood before the Eternal with their little ones and their wives and their children." So here was this, the entirety of Judah basically fasted. They stood before God in the temple. And Jehoshaphat issued this prayer, and there was a deliverance, a supernatural deliverance that actually occurred. Now the fact is that this deliverance that occurred, his prayer that he issued, and the calling to the fast of all of Judah didn't come out of a clear blue sky. You might think, oh well, he just kind of got up there and he said, oh well, you know, he said what he said. But it didn't. There are things that actually led up to this event. There were things that were recorded for us to realize. These things have been recorded and saved down through the millennia for us at the end time to read and to realize. And we look at this and we know that there are going to be times in our life that we also can pray for, "We have no might against this," the great whatever it is that we are facing. "Neither do we know what to do, but our eyes are upon you." And we fast and we pray. And I think it's necessary for us from time to time to look back in examples like this and to understand what they went through and to put it into a modern context. And that's what I'd like to do today. I'd like to give the background of this event. And I do that really not just for historical sake. I mean, the history is interesting. But I do it really so that we can have greater understanding and also faith ourselves when we face similar things. Because we are going to be facing similar things. And we do need to fast. We do need to pray. We need to make sure that we are close to God. And what the background was, the things that were going on around this particular event, I think is quite interesting. And so we'll spend the Bible study today looking at Jehoshaphat. And that's the title of the Bible study is Jehoshaphat. I want to look at his childhood. That's the first point I want to deal with. I want to look at his relations with Israel in the north, because he was the king of Judah. That's the second point. I want to talk about his relations with Israel. I want to talk thirdly about why or how he was able to get all of Judah to fast. I mean, you look at the ancient people and all the things that went on, you see, well, how on earth did he manage to get all of Judah to fast? You know, people were worshipping all these foreign gods and so on. What was going on at that time? Fourthly, I want to actually look at this key event, this key example of prayer and fasting, and just look and just remind ourselves of what actually happened, because this is something that we need to remind ourselves in the future, undoubtedly. And finally, the final point is I want to talk about his final lesson that he had to learn in later life. It's a lesson we also have got to learn as well. And it was, again, I think it's a very interesting account. I think it's something that we do need to look at and we do need to be aware of. Now, it says in Proverbs 22:6, you can put in your notes, don't need to turn there, that we train up a child in the ways he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. And this is true of so many of these kings. Where you see a righteous king, you will find that something has gone on to cause that righteousness. Some training has actually gone on. And we ourselves need to make sure we do train our children, we train our grandchildren, so that their reaction will be right. You know, it is a responsibility for all of us. And so when we're looking here at Jehoshaphat's childhood, we need to just look and apply and just notice what in fact took place, and understand that later on in life, these lessons that he'd learned actually came to the fore, and they shaped and they moulded the lessons that he then subsequently had to learn. And he had a great deal of impact, undoubtedly, on this example over here in 2 Chronicles 20. Now, what I strongly suggest you do is that round about 2 Chronicles 17, something like that, you put a marker, and you put another marker over in 1 Kings, kind of around about 16, something like that, 20, whatever. So if we turn over to 1 Kings 22 to start off with, if you put your markers there, because we'll be flipping back and forth between these two accounts. And right at the end of 1 Kings, just before it goes into 2 Kings, we find a bit of information there, and we can start to piece together a little bit about Jehoshaphat. Now, 1 Kings 22, verse 41, it says, "And Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa," so he was the son of Asa. Now, you can go back and you can see who Asa was. But anyway, "he is the son of Asa, began to reign over Judah in the fourth year of Ahab, king of Israel." So he's a contemporary with Ahab. In fact, Ahab came to the throne in Israel, and his father, Omri, built Samaria. And Jehoshaphat then became king of Israel when the fourth year of Ahab. As we'll go on and talk about, Elijah, remember, was prophesying at that time up in the northern kingdoms. So here's Jehoshaphat. Fourth year, he began to reign in Judah. And Jehoshaphat was 35 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 25 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhi, or Shilhai. So he's 35 years old when he began to reign after his father Asa. Now, if you turn back a few pages to 1 Kings 15, in 1 Kings chapter 15, you find in verse 9, you find it says, "And in the 20th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, reigned Asa over Judah." So it's not very far after the actual division of the kingdom we're looking at. Now, this is the father of Jehoshaphat. "And 41 years he reigned in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Absalom," as it probably should be better understood. Now, it wasn't actually his mother's name, it was actually his grandmother's name, was Maacah. They tended to do that, Maacah, the daughter of Absalom. Now, so we're seeing that Asa ruled 41 years. Jehoshaphat was 35 years old when he began to reign after his father Asa. So basically, this tells us that Jehoshaphat was born in the sixth year of Asa's reign. Okay? So Asa had been reigning for 6 years, and in that sixth year, his son Jehoshaphat was born. Now, if we turn over to 2 Chronicles chapter 14, again we start piecing together a little bit of information about what's going on, and we're trying to understand a little bit about his childhood. But in 2 Chronicles chapter 14, it says, "So Abijah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David, and Asa his son reigned in his stead." And this is verse 1, 2 Chronicles 14 verse 1. "And all his days the land was quiet for 10 years. So the first 10 years of his reign, he had peace. So Jehoshaphat was born in the sixth year of Asa's reign, and until he was about 5 years old, he had peace. There was peace, and they're actually building up the armaments and so on of Judah. Now, in 2 Chronicles 14, if we read a little bit more, let's look in verse 8. It says, "And Asa had an army of men that bare targets and spears out of Judah, 300,000, and out of Benjamin that bare shields and drew bows, 280,000. All of these were men of valor." So we're looking here at an army of 300,000 and 280,000, so it's 580,000 And it was then, it says, and there came out against them Zerah the Ethiopian with a host of 1,000,000, that's a million, and 300 chariots, and they came to Marasha. So here we have an event, and remember, this is about the time when Jehoshaphat was about 5 years old, something like that. And Asa then went out to meet him. And Asa cried, verse 11, to the Eternal his God, and said, Eternal, nothing with you, it's nothing to you to help, whether with many or them that have no power, help us, Eternal our God. For we rest on you, and in your name we're going against this multitude. O Eternal, you are our God, let not man prevail against you. So the Eternal smote the Ethiopians before Asa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. Now, you look at certain historical sources, I believe it's Egyptian sources, it appears as if there were they had a sudden storm. They sent the chariots in first against this much reduced, I mean, it was a 2-to-1 advantage to the Ethiopians. They sent the chariots in. The chariots then had a sudden storm of rain that bogged them down, and I think hailstorms as well, and they simply couldn't do anything. And then the entire enemy, therefore, suddenly took fright, thinking this was a sign from God, which it undoubtedly was. And it just turned the battle. And they, therefore, were able to rout the entire nation, the huge host that was there. Now, remember, here is Jehoshaphat, and he is about 5 at the time. And at that time, in 2 Chronicles, chapter 15, if we go on a little bit further, and the Spirit of God came upon Azariah, the son of Oded. And he went out to meet Asa. Here's Asa returning. And remember, Jehoshaphat now is 5 years old. And he said to him, Hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Eternal is with you while you are with him. And if you seek him, he will be found of you. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. Now for a long season Israel has been without the true God, and without a teaching priest, and without law. But when they in their trouble has turned to the Eternal God of Israel and sought him, he was found of them. And in those times there was no peace to him that went out, nor to him that came in, but great vexations upon all the inhabitants of the countries, and nations were destroyed, and so on. And in verse 8 it says, And when Asa heard these words and the prophecy, it says, Be strong therefore, and don't let your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. When Asa heard these words and the prophecy of Oded, the prophet, he took courage and put away the abominable idols of all the lands of Judah. So presumably, Azariah was actually taking the words from his father, from Oded. And the prophecy came to Oded, but Azariah came out to meet him and actually carried the prophecy. Put away the abominable idols of all the land of Judah and Benjamin, and out of the cities which had taken from Mount Ephraim, and renewed the altar of the Eternal that was before the porch of the Eternal. So here was Asa, the father of Jehoshaphat, turning because of a prophecy. Now here was, and during these years that this took place, it was between the age of 5 when the actual army was defeated, to the age of 9, because it goes on, and it says in verse 10, it says, So they gathered themselves together at Jerusalem in the 3rd month, in the 15th year of the reign of Asa. So we're looking now at about the age of 9. This is Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat would have witnessed this particular event. Because in verse 9 it says, He gathered all of Judah and Benjamin, and the strangers with them, out of Ephraim and Manasseh. Now Ephraim and Manasseh were in the northern tribes. So here were people coming down from the north. It wasn't just a case of Judah. Here were people actually coming from Israel in the north. And out of Simeon, and Simeon was even further up north than that. For they fell to him out of Israel in abundance when they saw that the Eternal his God was with him. So the evidence of this defeat of the Ethiopians went right into Israel. And it went out into the nations round about, and they heard about this defeat. And undoubtedly, within the palace or wherever we're looking at Jehoshaphat, in these very formative years, he also would have known about this defeat. This was forming his outlook on life. This was how he saw God. This is how he started to understand. And he also saw his father. He saw his father going around or putting into effect this cleaning up of Judah. And there were certain things that actually happened, as we'll go on and read. that happened within the very household itself, for he fell out of him in Israel in abundance when they saw the Eternal God was with him. And they gathered themselves at Jerusalem in this 15th year, and this, as I say, in this time Jehoshaphat would have been about 9, and they offered to the Eternal the same time the spoil that they brought, 700 oxen, 7,000 sheep, and they entered into a covenant to seek the Eternal God of their fathers with all their heart and all their soul, that whoever wouldn't seek the Eternal God of Israel would be put to death, whether small or great, man or woman. So here was this covenant that they actually went into. And Jehoshaphat, as I say, you're looking at, he was about 9. And if you notice what it says in verse 16, and also concerning Maacah, the mother of Asa, is it looking in the margin there? It's the grandmother of Asa, the king. He removed her from being queen because she made an idol in a grove, and Asa cut down her idol, stamped it, burned it in the brook of Kidron. And he says, the high places weren't taken away out of Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was perfect all his days. Now, you might say, well, why aren't the high places taken away? Well, what used to happen, as far as we can gather, is that the high places were used to offer sacrifices to God, to the Eternal. But unfortunately, they were corrupted in many cases. Many times they would be corrupted into paganism, because it was at the temple that they were supposed to be offering the sacrifices. But they would do it. In other words, you've got a sacrifice. You don't want to take it, you know, so many miles all the way down to the temple to offer it. You go to a high place locally. And it's much easier, and therefore people would do this. And yet that wasn't stopped. You can almost understand him getting rid of the real problems first, and then dealing with this problem, which is, if you like, almost lesser sin. But unfortunately, those high places became pagan places. It was degenerated into paganism. It was something that that was not supposed to be done. Now, so here we see the great-grandmother. Now, this obviously must have been an influential figure within the household. But she was booted out of office by Asa, which is the father of Jehoshaphat. And it was done because of idolatry. At the same time as all the country was being cleaned up, and these formative years, you're looking from the age of 5 down to about the age of 9, he would have seen all this going on. He would have seen his grandmother removed. He would have known why. And these would have had quite a big impression upon Jehoshaphat. Now, there is a discrepancy here as we go into his childhood. And I just want to deal with that discrepancy a little bit. Now, I can't give you an absolutely 100% cast-iron guarantee that my explanation is correct, but I can show you an explanation for it. If we, again, keep your marker over here in 2 Corinthians, 2 Chronicles, sorry, not 2 Corinthians, 2 Chronicles, and go back to 1 Kings again. And if we go back to 1 Kings 15... I want you to notice in 1 Kings 15 what it says here. In 1 Kings 15, verse 16, it says, "And there was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days." Okay? And if you go over the page to verse 32, in verse 32, "And there was war between Asa and Baasha, king of Israel, all their days." So I reckon there must have been war between Asa and Baasha all their days, because it's mentioned twice. And yet, if you go back over into 2 Chronicles again, using your marker, go back to 2 Chronicles at the end of chapter 15, it says in verse 19, "And there was no more war until the 35th year of the reign of Asa." Now, after this event that took place. Now, the 35th year of the reign of Asa was actually after Baasha was dead. So there's something wrong here. There's something which is not right. It doesn't fit. In addition, if you go into chapter 16, it says, "In the 36th year of the reign of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, came up to Judah and built Ramah to the intent that he might none go out to the Asa, the king of Judah." So here in we're looking at after Baasha was dead, he actually came up and started actually building some cities, which is kind of suspicious, to say the least. Now, the answer, as I say, is probably, I'm not going to give it absolutely definitely, because if you if you look, it looks as if he died, this Baasha actually died in the 27th year of the reign of Asa. If you go and actually look at all the chronology, he actually died in the 27th year. So he's not, you cannot have this war going on. What it probably means here in 2 Chronicles 15, if you look at the context of this passage, he's going into this war with Baasha, the king of Israel, and it is to do with the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel, and the war between these two parties, and what was happening in Judah and what was happening in Israel. Now, at that time, this is the time when, remember we're looking in verse 9, he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and the strangers with them out of Ephraim and Manasseh, and out of Simeon they fell for him. This is 15 verse 9. They fell to him out of Israel in abundance when they saw the Eternal was with him. This was actually taking place during the reign of Baasha. And Baasha was none too pleased. Because if you remember Rehoboam and Jeroboam and the confrontation that they had, and how Jeroboam actually caused the Jeroboam, he went ahead and made the calves of Israel, and he caused Israel to sin. He moved the feast from into the eighth month. He presumably moved from Sabbath to Sunday, and various other things like this. There was a confrontation over the religious issues within the north and the south. Now, when we look at this, therefore, in that context, you can actually look at this where it says, and there was no more war, in verse 19 of 2 Chronicles 15, and there was no more war until the 35th year of the kingdom of Asa, the kingdom rather than the reign. In other words, we're not looking at Asa specifically, we're looking at the kingdom of Asa, we're looking at the kingdom that was in Judah. And it says, in the 36th year of the kingdom of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, came against Judah. In other words, we're looking at the next year. So we're looking at something that was taking place, really, in the 15th and 16th years of Asa, not the 35th and the 36th years of Asa. That is probably what the meaning is. It's to do with the actual context and the way, in fact, it puts it together. And it makes much more sense. Once those two verses are understood, the whole of what was taking place at that time starts to become understandable. If you want to put down in your notes, in 2 Chronicles 12, well, no, I won't turn there. 2 Chronicles 12, verse 13, you'll find Rehoboam actually reigned for 15 years. So Rehoboam was 15 years. And in 2 Chronicles 13:2, you'll find Abijah, which was the father of Asa. So Rehoboam was his grandfather. Abijah was his father. He reigned for 3 years, and then you get Asa. So you've got a total of 20 years of those two people, of his grandfather and his father. You subtract them from the 35 years of the reign of the kingdom of Asa, and you then get the actual of his specific reign, and the 36 years as well. So what we see, therefore, here in 2 Chronicles 16, and remember, we're looking at the time when Jehoshaphat was 9, he's coming into about 10 years old at this time. And in this time, in chapter 16, Baasha, king of Israel, came against Judah and built Ramah. Now, Ramah is about 6 miles north of Jerusalem, so it's very, very close to Jerusalem. It's a town just north of it. To the intent that he may let none go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. So the reason he was doing that was because people were coming to Asa. And we know this because of what it says here in verse 9 of the preceding chapter, that they were coming from Ephraim and Manasseh and Simeon, and they came out of Israel in abundance when they saw that Eternal, his God, was with him. So we're seeing these people coming down, and Baasha was determined to stop this. So he then started to build Ramah, which was just to the north of Jerusalem. And then here we look, let's see, if we go on into Yeah, into verse 2 it says, Asa brought out silver and gold from the treasures of the house of the Eternal and the king's house, and they sent them to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, who dwelt in Damascus. Now these treasures, if you notice back in the preceding chapter, verse 18, he had brought into the house of God the things that his father had dedicated, and he himself had dedicated silver, gold, and vessels. Now, dedicated to whom, it doesn't say. It might have even been to pagan gods or something, and they may have been cleansed and then brought into the temple, but however it was dedicated, it was brought into the temple. And he actually used that money then, and he went and sent to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, that dwelt in Damascus, this is verse 2 of chapter 16, and said, there's a league between you and me, as there was between my father and your father. I've sent you silver and gold. Break the league with Baasha. And Ben-Hadad listened to the king Asa, and sent captains of his armies against the cities of Israel, and they smote Ijon and Dan, and all the store cities of Naphtali. So we're looking at the attack actually was made in therefore the north of Israel. So here he was, Baasha was within 6 miles of Jerusalem. He then sends to Syria, says, look, you attack him, and here's all silver and gold or whatever to pay for it. And so he says, okay, fine, I'll take your silver and gold. He attacks him in the north, and Baasha therefore has to go north. He has to leave what he was actually doing. And it stopped this problem, and this is what he was wanting. And remember, during this time, you're looking at Jehoshaphat was 10. And he was of an age that he would understand what was going on. He was in a royal court, being trained in a royal household. He would have known what was going on. He would have understood something in that regard. And so if we're looking at his teenage years, starting from about age 10, the formative years, from about age 5 through to about age 10, was this entire conquest that took place of the Ethiopians and the cleaning up of Judah. Then his father Asa makes this faulty decision and goes to Syria, and as it then said, it says verse 7 of chapter 16, it says, and at that time Hanani the seer came to Asa king of Judah and said to him, because you have relied on the king of Syria and not relied on the Eternal your God, therefore is the host of the king of Syria escaped out of your hand. Weren't the Ethiopians and Lubims a huge host with many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Eternal, he delivered them into your hand. For the eyes of the Eternal run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of those that heart is perfect towards him, or loyal towards him. In this you have done foolishly, therefore from this point you are going to have wars. Now remember, this was at the beginning, when Jehoshaphat was just moving into teenage. He was just before he was a teenager. And this actually happened to his father. And the reaction of Asa was interesting. He was wrath, he was furious with the seer and put him in a prison house. He's in a rage with him because of this thing. And Asa oppressed, or he crushed some of the people for the same time. In other words, people that actually supported this. People that criticized him, he went absolutely berserk over this. And yet here is Jehoshaphat moving into teenage and actually watching what's taking place. He sees that, okay, Baasha is moved out. Yeah, he gets his comeuppance in that sense, because then what actually happens, if you notice verse 6, that Asa the king took all Judah. And if you notice, he's putting in your notes 1 Kings 15:22, there was nobody exempted from this. It was a total... the entire nation went to work on this thing because it was so serious. It was mere 6 miles from Jerusalem in the north. They got the entirety of Judah, and they carried away the stones of Ramah. They overtook whatever garrison was there, because it hadn't been fully built yet. And the timber thereof with that Baasha was building. And he built then, therefore, Geba and Mizpah, which were very close by, but better strategically to defend from the north. There was the northern tribes that would be coming down. These two cities that he built were able to therefore defend it. And at that time, then, this seer came. And he said, look, you've done this foolishly. You're therefore going to have war. And for the entirety of his teenage years, from the age of 10, right through until he was 21, Jehoshaphat witnessed wars. Now, as we've just, you know, gone and seen over in 1 Kings, in 1 Kings 15, verse 16 and 32, there was wars between Asa and Baasha all their days. This was a time of war throughout the entire teenage of Jehoshaphat. And right through until he was 21, and that's when the death of Baasha actually occurred. Now, this also is going to have an effect on his outlook and the way in which he's going to approach things. And in this section where the seer Jehoshaphat would have seen that, in verse 11, he also would have seen at the end of his life. Now, this is the time when Jehoshaphat would have been in his late 20s. And behold, the acts of Asa, first and last, this is verse 11 of chapter 16, they're written in the books of the king of Judah and Israel. And Asa, in the 39th year of his reign, was diseased in his feet, and it's probably almost certainly his reign, I would have thought there. It might, again, it may have been that he had this disease in his feet even longer. Anyway, it says, until the disease was exceeding great, yet in his disease he did not seek to the Eternal, but to the physicians. Notice he seemed to have this row with the seer, and he really went his own way at that time. He went to the physicians. And Asa slept with his fathers, and he died in the 41st year of his reign. And they buried him in his own sepulchre, which he made for himself in the city of David, and laid him in the bed which was filled with sweet odours, and divers kinds of spices prepared by the apothecary's art, and they made a very great burning, that's a burning of incense, for him. And Jehoshaphat his son reigned in his stead, and strengthened himself against Israel. So, here we can see, again, the formative years of Jehoshaphat. We see in the initial part of his life, this incredible deliverance from the Ethiopians, where it was a 2-1 opposition, and the entire reversal within the king's household, and within the way he brought Judah together, and this covenant that they made. By the time he was 9, all the way through those formative years, he had that. And by the time he was 9, the covenant was actually made. By the time he was 10, Baasha therefore started his work. His father made a foolish mistake, and he then, throughout his teenage, he had wars because of his foolish mistake, that he went ahead and he put his reliance in men rather than within God. And this must have had an effect on Jehoshaphat, undoubtedly. Now, it wasn't just, however, the effect of trusting in God that this would have had an effect on Jehoshaphat. What it would have had as an effect is that he would not want war with Israel. And if he could have peace with Israel, he would probably do it. So, because he was a carnal human being. And if he wanted, he would undoubtedly want to go ahead and have peace. Now, if we go into the second point, how his relations with Israel in the north. And we just remind ourselves, again, if you put in your notes, 1 Corinthians 15:33. Where it says that evil company corrupts good habits, or corrupts good manners, as it says in the King James. And if we keep evil company, it will corrupt us. And it is something that we have got to be very careful of. And we find that the story of Jehoshaphat really, really nails this down, as we'll go on and we'll find in his later life. He finally learns it. The lesson really gets through. It sinks through right at the end of his life. But it says in 1 John 2:15, again, put in your notes there, you don't love the world or things in the world, because these things are passing. So these things really do apply to us. When we're looking at his relationships with Israel in the north, he was trying to make peace. He was constantly trying to have peace with his nearest neighbor, people that he regarded as his brother in that sense. But, you know, he wasn't wise in doing what he was doing. And so it says, don't love the world. And again, the section which I remember I gave a Bible study on Haggai, where he's asked, you know, go and ask the priest if you've got clean and unclean. If they're clean, if you've got something which is clean in your garments, and you touch something, does that make that clean? And of course, the answer is no, it doesn't. But if you've got something unclean, if you're unclean by a dead body or something, and you touch something that is clean, does that make it unclean? The answer is yes, it does. And we've got to be aware of this within the church. And again, the lesson of Jehoshaphat is that the relations with Israel in the north had problems for him. And yet he was trying desperately to make peace. He was trying to have peace between north and south based on his experience of his teenage. He'd seen the wars that were between his father and the north, and he'd seen Baasha, and he didn't want to go back to that again. And you can fully understand the way that that was the case. Now, if we look at the just a little bit, I'm not going to go and turn or even mention the references. You're going to have to do that yourself if you want to. But Jeroboam reigned for 22 years. Now, this is up in the north. Jeroboam reigned 22 years. Nadab reigned 2 years. That was his son. And Baasha then reigned 24 years. Now, I think he murdered Nadab, basically. And this was all, Nadab was contemporaneous with Asa, as was Baasha. Then Jehu prophesied against Baasha, and his son Elah reigned for 2 years, and Zimri then I think murdered him or whatever. You'd have to go back and read it all, but Zimri lasted 7 days. I mean, it was absolute chaos in that time. So when you're looking at the events in the 20s, in his 20s of Jehoshaphat, there wasn't an enormous amount of problem with war at that time. And the peace, therefore, was being made up with the northern tribes. Omri, he reigned 12 years. There was a civil war just before that time. This is up in the northern time. And he built Samaria as his capital. He bought and built Samaria. And Ahab then, aged 20, he reigned for 22 years. This was in Asa's 38th year that he began to reign. So 4 years afterwards, then Jehoshaphat actually comes in to reign down in the south. So you can see that there was absolute chaos in the northern time, right up to the very start of Jehoshaphat. So after the death of Baasha, right the way through his 20s, right into the start of Jehoshaphat, there was chaos up there. If we look at in 2 Chronicles 17 and just read a little bit of what actually happened, in verse 10, for instance, 2 Chronicles 17, verse 10, the fear of the Eternal fell on all the kingdoms of the land that were round about Judah. This is after Jehoshaphat came to power. So that they made no war against Jehoshaphat. It was a time of peace when he first started. And some of the Philistines brought Jehoshaphat presents and tribute, silver, and the Arabians brought him flocks, 7,700 rams and 7,700 he-goats. And Jehoshaphat became waxed great exceedingly, and he built in Judah castles and cities of store. Now, in verse 13, notice, and he had much business in the cities of Judah. Now, he was a Jew, and he obviously, he knew, and he encouraged trade and commerce within this area. And he did cause prosperity within the area of Judah. He had peace at the beginning of his reign, and he did what he could to make sure that the business side of the nation was promoted. And if you start totaling up from verse 13 on, all the way down to verse 18, you'll find that the army that he had available to him was a 1.16 million strong army. So this was obviously because he had a great deal of business, as it says in verse 13. He had a great deal of power in that regard. It was probably why the Philistines and the Arabians and so on voluntarily seemed to give him almost like tribute. They saw him as a major power in the area, and people didn't attack him. People saw that God was with him. They heard what happened to the Ethiopians. And it's these things seem to be, as we'll go on and we'll see some of other things as well, as we'll go a little bit further on to see why that was the case. But at the start of his reign, we're looking at a peaceful time. We're looking at business deals going on. We're looking at nations giving tribute. We're looking at an army of over 1 million men. And in this, and remember, his background in his teenage years, it was a case of war continually with the northern tribes. He decided to make sure that there was going to be peace. And if you notice in chapter 18, verse 1, now Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance. And it's a little tiny phrase. Joined affinity with Ahab. Now, on the surface, it looks so. He kind of joined affinity. What does he mean? Joined affinity with Ahab. What did he do? What he did is he made a marriage between his son and Ahab's daughter. But it wasn't just Ahab's daughter. It was Ahab and Jezebel's daughter. And that was the problem. That was the problem. If we turn over to 2 Chronicles 21, we'll see exactly who this was. 2 Chronicles 21, verse 5. It says, Joram was 32 years old when he began to reign. Now, this is the son of Jehoshaphat. Joram was 32 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 8 years in Jerusalem, and he walked in the ways of the king of Israel, like did the house of Ahab, for he had the daughter of Ahab to wife, and he wrought that which was evil in the eyes of the Eternal. So, with all the things that Jehoshaphat did, totally destroyed by his son. Totally destroyed. He walked in total opposite direction because of the marriage that was made and because of this this league that he had. Now if you go into chapter 22, notice in verse 2, it says 42 years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. Now notice, it was the daughter of Omri. It wasn't. It was the granddaughter of Omri. Because remember, Omri was the father of Ahab. They tended, when it says the daughter of, they tend to give the grandparents for some reason in scripture. And he also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. So his mother's name also was Athaliah. Now Athaliah, you'll find that when Joash, remember I mentioned that you'll normally find a righteous king will have instruction from a very early age. Joash was one that had the instructions by the priest, which was Jehoiada. This was later on, after this. And it was Athaliah who murdered the king's children. So as she became a grandmother, this woman, she actually murdered the children of the king. And it was only Joash being saved by the priest that actually thwarted that. But this was a wicked, this woman was the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. Now, when we're looking at this relationship, therefore, with Israel, we see when it says in chapter 18, verse 1, where it says joined an affinity with, it is you're looking at this marriage, the marriage between his son and Ahab's daughter, Ahab and Jezebel's daughter. And when we're looking in 2 Chronicles, we go back to chapter 18 again. It says, after certain years, verse 2, he went down to Ahab to Samaria. Now, this was probably later on, in fact, almost certainly later on. And Ahab, in verse 3, king of Israel, said to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, will you go with me to Ramoth-Gilead? Because Ramoth-Gilead had been taken by the Syrians, and he had to go and get them out. And he answered him and said, I am as you are, my people is your people, we will be with you in the war. He made this affinity. He had a daughter-in-law who was this man's daughter. And therefore, he was doing what he could to try and maintain peace, to stop what had happened in his teenage. He was doing everything he could to alleviate what he saw through his teenage years. And he goes on into, it says, Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, inquire, I pray you, at the word of the Eternal today. And therefore the king of Israel gathered together of prophets 400 men and said to them, shall we go to Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or shall I forbear? And they said, go up, for God will deliver the king's hand. But Jehoshaphat said, isn't there a prophet of the Eternal besides, that we may inquire of him? So in other words, these prophets were not prophets of the Eternal. These prophets were pagan prophets. Now they thought that they were in contact with the true God, but they certainly weren't anything but. And in verse 12, it says, and the messenger that went to call Micaiah spoke to him, saying, behold, the words of the prophets declare good to the king with one assent. Therefore, let your word, therefore, I pray you, be as one of theirs. Speak you good. And Micaiah said, as the Eternal lives, whatever the God will say, that is what I'm going to say. And when he was come to the king said to him, Micaiah, shall we go to Ramoth Gilead to battle, or shall I forbear? And he says, oh, go up and prosper. You'll be delivered into your hands. I mean, that's what I've been told to say. That's really, it was a sarcastic comment, saying, look, that's what I've been told to say by this messenger you sent me. And the king said, how many times shall I adjure you, tell me nothing but the truth? And he said, I did see all Israel scattered upon the mountains as sheep that haven't a shepherd, and the Eternal said they have no master. And he then tells the king, King Ahab, that he's going to die. And Ahab then says, didn't I tell you that you wouldn't prophesy good of me? And he had been, Ahab had been told that he was going to die anyway, but this was reiterated. And he said, therefore hear the word of the Eternal. And he said, I saw the Eternal sitting upon his throne, and all the host of heaven standing on his right hand and on his left. Now I want you to notice this, because there has actually been a booklet written by one of the groups on the internet that talks about this and tends to give the impression that God's righteous angels can turn bad. That is wrong. This is not true. This is a vision that was seen. It was not, or a dream or whatever. It was not real. It is not something, it's not actually looking at the throne of God. It is a vision that was given to Micaiah. And the idea that this became a lying spirit, this was a lying spirit, it was a demon. So we're looking at something, this was, we're not looking at a good angel becoming bad. It simply isn't true. In verse 18, it's clear that it's actually a vision that's taking place. And verse 33, we see how a certain man drew a bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of his harness, and he therefore died. So Ahab dies, and this was, and also it's very, very near, Jehoshaphat, very near, came very near to dying himself in this alliance that he'd made. Now, if we go back to 2 Kings, and let's watch my time a little bit, because the last points aren't really, we can go through those fairly quickly, but 2 Kings, in 2 Kings chapter 2, we find verse 12, Elisha saw it and cried, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof, and he saw him no more, and took hold of his own clothes and tore him in two pieces. So Elijah was taken away, and Elisha then has Elijah's mantle. And if we go on a little bit over into 2 Kings chapter 3, we find Joram, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel, this is verse 1, in Samaria, the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and reigned for 12 years. So here's Joram in the 18th year of Jehoshaphat. So Jehoshaphat there is around about 53 years old at that time. And if you notice in verse 7, it says, and he went and he sent to Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, saying, the king of Moab has rebelled against me. Now, this happened after Ahab died. This is the northern tribe. Moab, who was giving tribute, rebelled against his son, Ahab's son. He said, won't you go with me against Moab to battle? And he said, I'll go up, and you are as my people, and my horses are your horses, and so on. So they went actually to attack Moab. Now this is important, because Moab is the principal ones that actually came against Judah. So why did it come against Judah? Because Judah was giving the army to Israel to fight against Moab in this particular case. If we go on a little bit further, in verse 11 it says, Jehoshaphat said, isn't there a prophet of the Eternal that we may acquire of the Eternal by him? And one of the kings of Israel's servants answered and said, there is Elisha, the son of Shaphat, which poured water on the hands of Elijah. And Jehoshaphat said, the word of the Eternal is with him. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. And Elisha said to the king of Israel, what have I got to do with you? Get to your own prophets of your father and the prophets of your mother. And the king of Israel said, no. And Elisha said, verse 14, as the Eternal host lives before whom I stand, surely, were it not that I regard the presence of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I wouldn't even look towards you nor see you. He would have nothing whatsoever to do with this king. And this king was the son of Ahab that was actually happening there. Now, just as an aside, by the way, if you want to put in your notes 2 Chronicles 21:12, you will find there that after this event, and it was Jehoshaphat's son. Now remember, this is Jehoshaphat. It almost appears that Elijah has gone at this time. The actual account of Elijah being taken up to heaven, it comes before that. Now, certainly it was the placement of this event in 2 Chronicles 21:12. You find that Jehoshaphat's son receives, after this time, a letter from Elijah. So Elijah being taken up into heaven, he doesn't get taken up into the third heaven, he gets taken up and deposited somewhere where he can retire, basically. And he lives in retirement, but keeps in contact with what's going on in Judah. And he warns this son who marries the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, and he warns him about his ways, and he actually writes a letter to that effect. So Elijah was still around at this time, but he was in retirement. He was a retired prophet at that time. But I want you to notice in this particular section that when they went up, what took place is that Elisha told them to go ahead and dig trenches for water. And water then came down the dried up riverbed. They actually came to this particular river that they reckoned they would have provisions for their animals. They couldn't get the provisions for their animals because the thing was dry, and they thought that they were going to all fall into the hands of the Moabites. But Elisha told them to dig the trenches. Water came down, filled the trenches. They drank, they washed, they had the water that they needed. And then in addition to that, what then happened was that the Moabites looked down with the rising sun, saw the red, presumed earth, and the rising sun in the water, and they thought there was blood on the ground, and they thought that the Israelites and the Edomites had fought against the Judah, and they'd all massacred each other, so they went rushing down there to get them. These people in Judah had been asleep, basically. They'd been working all night, digging all these pits and working hard. They'd gone ahead and filled them with water. They'd used the water. They rushed down in, and they were completely massacred because they didn't expect anybody to be there. They thought there was blood that they could see. So there was a great rout that took place of Moab. But I want you to notice who it was. It was Moab and keep that in mind as we go on into the actual event that takes place, because it's Moab, Edom, and the Mount Seir, the people that came against them. So this was, if you like, the trigger that caused that to occur. Another question on the third point is, why and how was he able to get all Judah to fast? Now, what we need to understand in Malachi 2, if you read in verse 6 and 8, again, put it in your notes, that from the priest's mouth comes knowledge, and you learn the law of the mouth of the priest. Now remember, that prophecy, that entire book, as much of that book applies to us today. You need to be able to be sure that the ministry is in fact teaching the word of God, and teaching it faithfully, and the way of God, and the way of God as we've been taught. But why was he able to get all Judah to fast? Now, again, I'm going to give you scriptures that you need to put down in your notes and look them up later, because I'm not going to go back and read them. But 2 Chronicles 15, verse about 9 to 12, verse 12. Remember, Asa made a covenant with God. It was Asa that was the father of Jehoshaphat. He made this covenant, and Jehoshaphat saw that. And also Judah was making that covenant with Jehoshaphat's father. In 1 Kings 15, verse 12, if you want to put that in your notes, you'll find that the idolatry was removed from the land, and all the sodomy as well. It wasn't just idolatry, it was the sodomites of the land were kicked out. It was something that the sodomy that was in there, it was probably a temple-based sodomy, but it was something that was also removed. You find that 2 Chronicles 16:2, that he used the temple treasure He saw his father use that temple treasure, and he saw the wars as a result. And in 1 Kings 22:46, you'll find that when Jehoshaphat came to power, he again moved against anything which was idolatrous, including the sodomy that was in the land. And he did, in fact, clean up the land of Judah in the initial that initial time. Now, if we go back to 2 Chronicles again, in 2 Chronicles 17, you flick over back there, when Jehoshaphat came into rule, I want you to notice what he did. It says in verse 1, Jehoshaphat his son reigned in his stead and strengthened himself against Israel. And he placed forces in all the fenced cities of Judah and set garrisons in the land of Judah and the cities of Ephraim, which Asa his father had taken. And the Eternal was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the first ways of his father David. That was before his sin with Bathsheba. That's what he's basically referring to, probably. And sought not unto Balaam, but he sought to the Eternal God of his father, and walked in his commandments, and not after the doings of Israel. And therefore the Eternal established the kingdom of his hand, and all Judah brought to Jehoshaphat presents, and he had riches and honor in abundance. And his heart was lifted up in the ways of the Eternal. Moreover, he took away the high places and the groves out of Judah. And it goes on, just showing how he actually, he sought God. But notice verse 7. It said, also, in the third year of his reign, so he cleaned up the land, but then he did something else. And remember, we're looking at why was he able to get all of Judah to fast and to pray. Also, in the third year of his reign, he sent to his princes, to Ben-Hail, to Obadiah, Zechariah, Nathaniel, and Micaiah to teach in the cities of Judah. So here were the princes who could read, and they were sent out to teach. And with them he sent Levites, and he starts listing them, Shemaiah, Nethaiah, and he lists the various Levites that went out with them. And with them, Elishama and Joram, which are priests. Now the priests had something very, very important. They had the book of the law, the first five books of Moses. And they taught in Judah and had the book of the law of the Eternal with them. And they went about throughout all the cities of Judah, and they taught the people. Now, if this was the case, if these were princes, and if these princes were going to go ahead and come into power, and I would see, that would be Samuel, yes, that would be correct. Basically, you're looking at them writing out the books of the law. They probably had their own copies of the books of the law themselves. And the fear of the Eternal fell on all the kingdom. So here he was actually teaching. It was therefore, when he was around about 38 years old, his task that he set right throughout all of Judah was to teach the people, and teach the people God's law and God's ways. Now, when you're looking, therefore, at the death of Ahab, we've looked at this. The death of Ahab, Jehoshaphat was about 53. If you turn over to chapter 19 of 2 Chronicles, he's gone against Moab as well. And in chapter 19, Jehoshaphat the king, in verse 1 of Judah, returned to his house in peace to Jerusalem. And Jehu the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, should you help the ungodly and love them that hate the Eternal? Therefore is wrath upon you from the Eternal. Now this was to Jehoshaphat, this was a warning. Nevertheless, there are good things found in you, in that you've taken away the groves of the land and have prepared your heart to seek God. And Jehoshaphat dwelt in Jerusalem, and he went again. Notice, he went again. And this time it seemed as if he went personally. Throughout the people, through the people from Beersheba to Mount Ephraim, and brought them back to the Eternal God of their fathers. So not only had he taught the people when he first came into power, and he went and sent the book of the law right the way around. That was the first thing he ever did. But after he had been warned about the problems that he was about to face, he went round and he taught the people. This was the second time that he went throughout Judah. And he set judges. So not only did he teach them, he set judges in the land throughout all the fenced cities of Judah, city by city. And he said to the judges, you be careful what you do, for you are not judging for man, but for the Eternal who is with you in the judgment. Therefore let the fear of the Eternal be upon you, You be careful, and you do it, for there is no iniquity with the Eternal our God, or respect of persons, or taking of bribes. So he cleaned up the judicial system as well. So he did an incredible amount of good in actually preparing the people's minds for God, and preparing them and having the right ways. There he says, moreover, in Jerusalem did Jehoshaphat set of the Levites and the priests and of the chief of the fathers of Israel for the judgment of the Eternal and controversies when they returned to Jerusalem. And he charged them, saying, thus shall you do in the fear of the Eternal faithfully with a perfect heart. And whatever cause will come to you of your brethren that dwell in the cities, between blood, blood, and law and commandments, statutes and judgments, you will even warn them that they do not trespass against the Eternal. And so wrath comes upon you and your brethren. This do, and you will not trespass. And behold, Amariah, the chief priest, is over you in the matter of the Eternal. And Zebediah, the son of Ishmael, the ruler of the house of Judah, and all the king's matters, also the Levites shall be officers before you. Deal courageously, and the Eternal shall be with the good. So he warned, he cleaned up the judicial system, he taught the people, he went round personally doing this. And this was the prelude to what you actually find in chapter 20. So I hope you can see now the background, that when you come to chapter 20, it wouldn't come out of a clear blue sky. There were things that were going on. There were things that happened in his early life. There were things that happened in his teenage life. There were things that he did wrong in going to Israel. There were reasons why he did that. In going to Israel, he'd gone ahead and he'd stirred up a hornet's nest with the Moabites. And all of these things were impacting as we move then into chapter 20 of 2 Chronicles. And so when you read chapter 20, you can now see also, because he trained the people, not only was it the fact that Moab was going to come against him, he was training the people as well. And so when he said, now we need to fast, these people responded. It wasn't just a case of out of a clear blue sky, he makes some kind of proclamation and certain things happen. So if we look at the actual key, this key example, this fourth point, which is in chapter 20, be aware when reading this that the scripture that says in Romans 10:17, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God in Romans 10:17, it's true. These people had been trained. They had heard. The judicial system had been cleaned up. The law of God had been taken round to them. They'd probably had copies of it, of certain portions of it, certainly, that they'd maybe taken notes down from the law. The people that were ruling them were ruling them according to that law. They had Levites that were over them. And in chapter 20, it says, verse 1, it came to pass, after all this judicial system, and after he'd gone throughout all the area training them, that the children of Moab and the children of Ammon, and with them others beside the Ammonites, this was in Mount Seir, came against Jehoshaphat to battle. And there came some that told Jehoshaphat, saying, there comes a great multitude against you from beyond the sea on this side of Syria. And behold, there be an Hazazon Tamar, which is Engedi. Now Engedi, if you go down from Jerusalem, south-east, down towards the top end of the Dead Sea, then you come to Jericho, which is down there. That's the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Jericho. That's about 21 miles. If you go further south along the Dead Sea, you come eventually to En-Gedi. And the only reason I know that is because I've been there. It's a lovely place, beautiful place at the moment. But basically, there's a river that runs into the Dead Sea at En-Gedi, and there's a waterfall there. And we went swimming many, many, many years ago, in the pool at the bottom of this waterfall. It was the most refreshing, wonderful. You go through this bamboo thicket as you actually get up to this waterfall. But here with this army encamped at En-Gedi, presumably because of the water that was there, because they can't drink the Dead Sea, they don't want to get Jordan. There's not enough water in Jericho, but En-Gedi there would be water. So here is this army encamped there. And Jehoshaphat feared, and set himself to seek the Eternal, and to proclaim a fast throughout all Judah. And Judah gathered themselves together to ask help of the Eternal. Even out of all the cities of Judah they came to seek the Eternal. And Jehoshaphat stood in the congregation of Judah and Jerusalem in the house of the Eternal before the new court, and said, O Eternal God of our fathers, aren't you God of heaven? And ruled, don't you rule in all the kingdoms of the nations, and in all your hand? In your hand is there not power and might, and that none is able to withstand you? Are you not our God, who drove out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel, and gave it to your seed of Abraham, your friend forever? And they dwell therein, they built a sanctuary in there for your name, saying that when evil comes, such as a sword, or judgment, or pestilence, and famine, we stand before this house, and your presence, for your name's on this house, and we cry for our infliction. And now behold the children of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, that you would not let Israel invade when they came into the land of Egypt, out of the land of Egypt. They turned from them and destroyed them not. And it talks about how they reward us to come and cast us out of your possession. O our God, will you not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that comes against us, neither do we know what to do. But our eyes are upon you. And all Judah stood before the Eternal with their little ones and wives and their children. So this was the problem. And this was the solution. This was the actual way in which it was handled. It was a godly way because they'd been trained and had been instructed beforehand. And he goes on, then upon Jehaziel, the son of Zechariah, the son of Benaiah, the son of Jeiel, the son of Mattaniah, a Levite of the sons of Asaph. Now the Asaph, as I understand it, were the singers, and the actual leader, head of the singers. Now whether this man was or not, I don't know. He may just have been a relatively lowly singer. But the Spirit of the Eternal came in the midst of the congregation, and he said, Listen, all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and you, King Jehoshaphat, thus says the Eternal to you, do not be afraid or dismayed by the reason of the great multitude, for the battle isn't yours, but God's. Tomorrow go against them, and behold, they come up by the cliff of Ziz, and you will find them at the end of the brook, and you will not need to fight in this battle. Set yourself to stand still. See the rescue of the Eternal with you, O Judah and Jerusalem. Don't fear or be dismayed, for tomorrow go out against them, for the Eternal will be with you. And Jehoshaphat bowed his head with his face to the ground. He realized this came from God. It wasn't just something that this man had said on his own behalf. And all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem fell before the Eternal, worshipping the Eternal. The Levites and the children of the Kohathites and the children of the Korites stood up to praise the Eternal, God of Israel, with a loud voice on high. And they arose early in the morning and went forth into the wilderness of Tekoiah. And as they went forth, Jehoshaphat stood and said, Hear me, O Judah, and you inhabitants of Jerusalem. Believe in the Eternal your God, so shall you be established. Believe his prophets, so shall you prosper. And when he had consulted with the people, he appointed singers to the Eternal. So again, it was just believe and trust in God, leave it in his hands. This is what we know that this is his message. And again, we are going to find ourselves in a situation like this. We are going to find ourselves, we can't do anything. And we're going to have to trust God to sort things out. It's the only way we can do it. And he appointed singers to the Eternal, and they praised the beauty of holiness as they went out before the army to say, Praise the Eternal, for his mercy endures forever. And when they began to sing and to praise the Eternal, the Eternal set ambushments against the children of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, which they were come against Judah, and they were smitten. For the children of Ammon and Moab stood up against the inhabitants of Mount Seir, utterly to slay and to destroy them. They probably went out round either side and attacked Mount Seir. And in attacking from either side, the arrows overshot and probably killed some of the other side, so they all had a great bust-up between themselves until there was absolutely nobody left. So the entire army was completely and utterly wiped out. And when Judah came towards the watchtower in the wilderness, they looked in the multitude, and there were dead bodies fallen on the earth, and none escaped. And when Jehoshaphat and his people came to take away the spoil, they found in abundance riches with dead bodies and precious jewels, and they kept on taking it away for 3 days. And the fourth day they assembled in the valley, and they blessed the Eternal. And they then came back to Jerusalem, verse 28, with psalteries and harps and trumpets to the house of the Eternal. And the fear of God was on all the kingdoms, and you'd imagine it would be, when they heard the Eternal fought against the enemies of Israel. So the realm of Jehoshaphat was quiet, for his God gave him rest around about. So that when God actually acted, it was a total and utter blessing. There was no sorrow with it, whatever. Is a total and utter blessing. And we can expect that if we put our trust in God and we leave our trust in God and we do what we must do ourselves, then God will He will see, he will acknowledge. If we fast, if we pray, if we draw close to God as God's people, he is the same God. It's the same Christ that was there. It's the same Christ as the head of the church today. And he has not changed, not one iota. So this has been recorded for us. But there was a final lesson that Jehoshaphat had to learn. And you find that final lesson in chapter 20. You actually, to understand it, you've got to put 2 Chronicles together with 1 Kings. And just to see how, in fact, Jehoshaphat learned this final lesson. Because in 2 Chronicles chapter 20, in verse 35, it says, "And after this did Jehoshaphat king of Judah join himself with Ahaziah king of Israel, who did very wickedly." So again, he was making these alliances northward, which was not wise. He'd been warned about this. He said, "What are you doing?" Remember? And he said, "Therefore you're going to have war." He'd been warned about this specifically. Yet here he was, he was making it. He didn't go up there and didn't fight on their behalf, but he was making an alliance with them. And he joined in verse 36 himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish. Now, certain commentaries will actually say that they weren't going to Tarshish as such. It was they're going to Ophir, as we'll go and read elsewhere. But the word ships of Tarshish meant seagoing ships. The Tarshish ships were the seagoing ships. And they made the ships in Ezion Geber. Now that's basically the, if you look at the Red Sea, that's between Egypt and the Sinai, there's the right-hand finger as you look at it, or the eastern finger of the Red Sea, and at the tip of there you have Ezion Geber. Now then Eliezer, the son of Dodava of Marisha, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, "Because you have joined yourself with Azariah, the Eternal has broken your works." Remember, he was a businessman. He actually increased the wealth of Judah at the beginning of his reign. He caused business to flourish, and he was using business to try and, as we'll go and find out, get gold from Ophir. "And the ships were broken that they were not able to go to Tarshish, or were no longer seaworthy." Was probably a better translation of that. They're no longer Tarshish ships. They're something which is different. And if you go back to 1 Kings 22, in 1 Kings 22, you find the same account, and you find a little bit more information in 1 Kings 22, right at the very end. In 1 Kings 22, it says in verse 48, it's interesting, it says verse 47, "There was then no king in Edom, and a deputy was king." You wonder whether that's because of the destruction that actually occurred to the Moabites and Edomites and so on. But in verse 48 it says, "Jehoshaphat made ships of Tarshish," in other words, these seagoing ships, "to go to Ophir for gold. But they didn't go, for the ships were broken at Ezion Geber," which is where they were basically made. They were launched, and then something happened, some storm blew up and wrecked them on the rocks or whatever. "Then said Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, to Jehoshaphat." And remember, they had actually gone together, as we'd found out over in 2 Chronicles 20. We find that they made an alliance to go ahead and go into this joint venture. And they were going to take these ships out. And then after they were wrecked, Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, said to Jehoshaphat, "Let my servants go with your servants in the ships." But Jehoshaphat wouldn't. In other words, he said, "Look, hang on a minute. This is wrong." So as I say, he started to understand this final lesson that was hammered home to him about evil company corrupts good habits. That you don't go ahead and start making alliances with these northern kingdoms, because they will lead you astray. It's not the way to go. It's not the way. It's not what the way of God. And where you find so often, just let's remind ourselves, let's go to Haggai. Again, over in Haggai. In Haggai, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. So, just a couple of chapter books before Malachi. In Haggai, let's see, chapter 2, it says, verse 6, it says, "For this says the Eternal of hosts, once again, it's a little while and I'll shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry. Now, this is talking about the future. It's not talking about that time when this was written. It's talking about the time we're in now. And I'll shake all nations, and the desire of all nations, that's Christ, will come, and I'll fill the house with glory. The silver's mine, the gold's mine. The glory of this latter house will be greater than the former, said the Eternal of Hosts. This place I'll give peace, says the Eternal of Hosts. We're talking about the temple that is to be built, the spiritual temple to which Christ will return. And in the 24th day of the 9th month, the 2nd year of Darius, came the word of the Eternal to Haggai by the prophet, saying, Thus says the Eternal of Hosts, Ask the priest concerning the law, saying, If one bears holy flesh in the skirt of his garment, and with his skirt touch bread, or pottage, or wine, or oil, or a feud, or anything, shall it be holy? And the priest answered and said, No. In other words, just because you have some people who are holy, that doesn't mean to say that the whole thing is holy. The fact that Jehoshaphat was holy, the fact that he tried to clear up, it didn't mean to say that him going up north to Israel, that was unholy, would go ahead and make that area holy. It's not the case. Then said Haggai, If one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? And the priest answered and said, It will be unclean. So him going up there was actually causing uncleanness to come into Judah. That was the problem. And that's why the prophets were continually against him for that. And he had to learn that. The final lesson is he learned that he couldn't have war alliances, but it had to come down to even business alliances. He couldn't have that. Then answered Haggai and said, So is this people, so is this nation before me, says the Eternal. So is every work of their hands, and that which they offer there is unclean. Now this, remember, is talking about us. So we've got to be very careful of this as well. It's something that we've got to be aware of, and we've got to be, we can't be linked with people going in a different way from the way of God. That's really the message of that. And it's something that Jehoshaphat had to also learn, that he could not be linked to people that were going in a different way from the way of God. He trained as Judah. He went round. He obviously spent a great deal of his wealth and time and trouble. And he went round, and he had the law of God taken round to all the people. He instructed them. That was why they were able to fast and pray. That was why they had that incredible miracle in 2 Chronicles 20. It was because they understood what God said, and the faith that they had was in the Word of God, because they knew the Word of God, because it had been explained to them. But he had to understand that he couldn't start corrupting that with the things that were in the north. It just simply was the wrong way to go. He couldn't go ahead and link what was the way of God with something that was totally different. So it is a message for us today as well, because, as I say, Haggai certainly reiterates that to us. But it is interesting, and it is also very encouraging when we look at this story of Jehoshaphat, that it has been recorded for us. It's a very encouraging account in 2 Chronicles 20 about the fasting and prayer and how great a rescue God gave to the people there. But I thought it was just worthwhile going through some of the background so we can see a bit more of what was going on and understand it didn't come out of a clear blue sky, but it was something that really led up to it through his entire life, through his teenage years, right the way through, and the events that were going on around at that time.